worked in teams. He wasn't the Western individual genius. You can't even accomplish anything in private art. So that's pretty amazing, eh? You should take this and read it to your students once a week, Reiner.
Yes, sounds like something I got to read to them for sure.
Yeah, it's sacred script. It really defines everything before Dobbstown showed up. You probably didn't hear it, but Ion says to Chad today, what I played, he asked a question. He says, well, you're starting to get into Dobbstown now. We're not going to get into that. That's Dobbstown stuff there, Chad. So did anybody hear that?
Yes, I did. I heard it.
Yeah. That's neat. Okay, so that's his answer to Lawrence Lamy. Now, a French guy gets up, and, you know, I ain't into language, so I don't know what the fuck he's asking. Doesn't matter. English, and McLuhan answers in English. That's good. There's something about, in quotes, he's got outer trip and inner trip. He's asking about that and about the hunter and the hunted. Okay, so McLuhan is addressing the International Association of Art Critics. You ever heard of that group, Reiner?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
How active it is now, but because the international community of art critics is so small now, I'm not even sure they're associated as that I'm aware of, at least.
Right. Well, let me just check something here.
Yeah, art writers.
I gotta check.
Yeah, check the internet.
No, but what were you just saying? The art writers are what?
I'm not sure that they're like the, well, currently there is such a shortage of reasonably good writers writing art criticism and art reviews. Most of the works are now, what I see often now is a lot of interview-based
kind of
writing. They just talk to the artist. It's like a chat, right? Like it's like a magazine chat.
Oral culture. It's all they can do is oral. They can't deal with tactility, so they fall back on orality.
Right, and that seems to be the major, I mean, from what I see now, that seems to be one of the major ways in which artists are being written about. It's like, basically, let's have a chat, like a little fireside chat, you know?
Yeah, because they can't use classifications. They just want to participate. You just want to share the space for the latest art that creates a fad that you want to be part of, to be where it's at.
Yeah exactly.
Yep.
And right now, one of the big—I mean, there are two major things that I see that are basically happening in the art world. One of them is a lot to do with identity-related issues, you know, whether that be gender, sexual, or race-based.
Yeah.
Or the other one is in the making of objects. There's this kind of phenomenal love of just junk, just using shit, junk, crap, everything that. You can find
garbage apocalypse as figure.
The garbage apocalypse is absolutely figure to the ground of what's happening, which is basically garbage.
Right.
So yeah.
So that's why Ion shows up to complete everything with precise scientific statements, including the process of incomprehension, in its instruction. In other words, the ground of everything is. Bigger garbage is absolute coherency and revelation.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll tell that to your kids. Revelation is the ground. Okay, so the French guy asked something, outer trip, inner trip. McLuhan says, a critic, after all, like anybody else, thinks of himself as speaking to somebody like anybody else. They think they're talking to somebody. Remember I heard McLuhan saying to somebody, you're trying to tell me something. You're speaking to me as if I'm somebody to receive you. But the ground is not that limited. So then he says Montaigne, who was one of the first book people writing about himself. Montaigne, when the book was new, said there was nobody to speak to. It is very interesting to go back to the 1500s and see the strange efforts that people made in that period to find a public. Now,
well, the notion of
Bob, on what use this week you said, speaking fools us into believing that what we have to say has something to do with anybody else.
Yes, yes. So that was a literary problem 500 years ago, and they felt the need to match. They thought it was important to find someone who says they were receiving your information. That's visual space bias. That's matching.
In Montaigne's period, the idea of public back in Montaigne's period was basically a brand new innovation.
Yeah, it hadn't happened yet.
Oh,
he couldn't. There weren't enough people who could read. So then McLuhan comments on the previous environment. He says, now the medieval writers had tiny little publics, maybe a few dozen people at most, because the manuscript could not be read very quickly and it could not be read by very many people. So you think of that movie, Name of the Rose. They sort of try to show some of that.
Yeah.
And based on Umberto Eco, who read a little McLuhan. But with print came the possibility at least of hundreds of readers and then thousands and so on. There was nobody who knew how to write for the printing press for a long time. Montaigne thought of himself as putting messages in bottles and throwing them in the ocean. Montaigne thought of the book as a message in a bottle. He did not believe that it could actually reach anybody except by chance. So what I said last week, if I said it to him, he says, fuck, Bob, yeah, that's the way it's always been. I am trying to connect with somebody. I want my public to share the same experience in the uniform book. But now we've been through all that, so it sounds new when I say, you know, you didn't think that you should reach anybody. I'm retrieving medieval awareness. So
I'm a great believer.
Now he's a, you are?
I am indeed.
In what? Anybody, that you're?
No, reaching anybody is a waste of time.
All right. So, he's sort of starting to mock the art critic. He thinks of himself as speaking to somebody. Okay. And he says, think of what your problem would be if in some African community you were the only person who could read and write, and you had a great masterpiece in mind, and you wrote it and got it published in English or in your own African dialect. Who would it be for? Actually, you cannot even begin to write until you have in mind a public. The public is a producer, not a consumer. For the painter, too, and for the art critic, the public is a producer, not a consumer. So most people think that there's just this passive public that you're going to get away with something, inflict on them. He's saying, no, you're a product of the public. Today we are in a very good position to realize that, what he had just said. We have scrapped all the publics, and the consumers have all become producers by virtue of Gallup polls and various investigatory committees. The whole world audience is now being used as a resource for research, and this is one function of the computer, to store data about everybody and to make it available to anybody for a small fee. That's what Facebook's in trouble for now.
Yeah, no shit.
When you asked, okay, so maybe this guy, the French guy, is asking about the art critic. As McLuhan says, when you asked about the art critic then, you have to say, who was the public for whom the painter worked? And then again, in a very subsidiary sense, who was the public for whom those art critics wrote about those painters? Who was the public for whom those art critics wrote about those painters? Mr. Rosenberg can answer those questions very well, having worked in that field for a long time. So he's putting on Rosenberg. Rosenberg doesn't have a clue what McLuhan's talking about. And McLuhan say, well, of course, Harold here, he knows all the answers to these issues I'm bringing up. He says, notice that the New Yorker and Esquire magazines, for which Rosenberg wrote, were fun magazines, and that lighthearted magazines of that sort should be the vehicles of serious articrism is itself rather strange. So he's mocking Rosenberg's public, which was in lighthearted magazines, for serious articrism. Where else would you print serious articrism except in a comic magazine? This is one of the hang-ups of the art critic. They don't have an audience, so they have to go into the enemy territory. Comic, humorous things, not serious. So that's pretty good. Never heard him say it that way before. But I knew he thought that way, when you ask the question about the art critic, who is the art critic for the rock bands today? Now, this is right when rock, 1970s, when Richard Meltzer's book comes out, the first rock criticism, serious rock criticism. So McClune's not aware. Let's see if he's aware of what he's saying here. When you ask the question about the art critic, who is the art critic for the rock bands today? Who are the people who do the evaluating and the standard making for the big bands? Well, Rolling Stone had been around for two or three years. It started in 67. There was a Hit Parader, Crawdaddy. So there were a couple of magazines. McClune doesn't seem to be aware of that. He says, this is worth looking into because what function these magazines aren't being read by art critics. They don't even know about Crawdaddy, and maybe they might know a little bit of Rolling Stone, but they don't know about Lester Bangs and these people who become culture heroes in the 80s for young people. Who are the people who do the evaluating and the standard making for the big bands? This is, and remember, the first rock book coming out by Dave Wally is on Zappa. Apparently, they don't consider whatever the books were written about the Beatles, they were not considered rock criticism or something. They say that Wally wrote the first rock book, rock biography. And he tried to have big ideas in it. He talked about time and how Zappa played with time. So McClune says, this is worth looking into because what function these bands perform for their audiences artistically is certainly an important question. What effects are they trying to do? They do a profound amount of educating of the young. Their credentials as educators have never been examined except by whom? I do not know. They're educated, but nobody's testing them. I am not sure that the art critic has a future in that kind of world. On the other hand, notice that so he's telling the art critics, like wherever he went, that you're a fucking obsolete. I am not sure that the art critic has a future in that kind of world. On the other hand, notice that you have a very high level of virtuosity, of discrimination and awareness among the consumers of rock music. The audiences are very critical. So they're analyzing acoustic space. They don't have any knowledge of tactility. Zappa is presenting tactility, and they don't understand that. The audiences are very critical. They are, many of them, participants. This is a new situation. It is like the old Homeric rhapsodists who were the professional performers of the poems, the harpers, the harpists, the bards. Their audiences were participants, too, and knew every trick in the game. Roxy accuses me and Ion of being rhapsodists. Okay? So then... he says, I think art criticism, in the sense of high standards of awareness of what is going on, probably is going to go up, up, up in the pop art world, but just what that might pretend, I am not sure. So art criticism is going to move to the pop world, so he is actually predicting the success of Lester Bangs and those guys. Lester Bangs has had biographies written about him. So the guys that I was reading in these early magazines, I liked their rock criticism. They were not considered serious. I remember some journalist in the 70s was giving the ranking of journalists, and he says, at the bottom is a rock critic. So McClune is saying that rock critic, its standards will go higher and higher. He says, I think art criticism, in the sense of high standards of awareness of what is going on, probably is going to go up, up, up in the pop art world, but just what that might pretend, I'm not sure. That's a good quote to put on the Kuskus blog. So then Mrs. Whelan, W-E-E-L-E-N, asks McClune, Mr. McClune, earlier in your talk you said that the camera is an eye turned towards the world, that the television eye can be compared to the eye of the blind man turned in an inner quest. So the camera does the outer world, television does the inner world. I wonder if you would mind elaborating on that, because of course at first sight it seems very contradictory, since the journey made inwardly by the blind man would seem to be rather the opposite of what takes place with a spectator watching television, because people think television is visual. I had that sort. I would like to ask if you could elaborate on that. I'll read that again. I wonder if you would mind elaborating on that, because of course at first sight it seems very contradictory, since the journey made inwardly by the blind man would seem to be rather the opposite of what takes place with a spectator watching television. I would like to ask if you can elaborate on that. McLuhan says, it is not an easy matter. I referred already to this book of Lucerin. It's interesting. McLuhan would say it's very clear in his books because it's a hot medium. But when he was in conversational mode, he'd pretend he didn't know nothing. It was all up in the air. So he'd be a different kind of person in a conference. This is not an easy matter. I referred already to this book of Lucerin. Jacques Lucerin, so he must have been talking in different situations that are not recorded here, because he's saying things I said earlier, but he didn't say it in the speech. Jacques Lucerin, who McLuhan considered an incredible book, it was a guy who goes blind and describes what happened to him very eloquently. Jacques Lucerin wrote a book called And There Was Light. It is in English and is about 1954, I think. Did somebody say something? Okay. It is in English and is about 1964, I think. There we go again.
Bobby, sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt. I'm sorry, it's Reiner. I have to interrupt because it's getting on to 2:30 in the morning, and I'm losing it.
Okay, but I only got a few more lines, so you might as well hear it all. Another couple minutes. Yeah.
All right, cool.
So he says, not an easy matter. I already referred to this book of Lucerin. Jacques Lucerin wrote a book called And There Was Light. It is in English and is about 1964, I think. Having gone blind, he became intensely conscious of the change in his sensory life and is one of the best studies of the inner trip undergone by a blind man that I have ever read. In the ancient world, the seer, the one who knew, was portrayed as a blind person. And he explains that sort of thing, Lucerin does, very well in this book. He also explains the enormous stepping up of the senses of touch and hearing resulting from blindness. So in a sense, so McLuhan was always studying the interplay of the senses caused by a new extension. So in a sense, in the television age of the inner trip, the other senses have become enormously more keen. And they all became louder. The ear, the art world, everything became, you know, extremely more blatant because we were actually in a tactile world which had no sensory life. So the rearview mirror became enormously more keen. The visual sense has gone down, but the other senses have come up into a higher, but he's interrupted by Mrs. Whelan. You mean the watcher? The senses of the watcher of the television? Like, they don't even understand. He's just talking about the watcher. And she's saying, you're talking about the watcher? Mr. McLuhan says, yes. His touch and taste and smell and hearing have got much more sensitive than they had been before. The watcher of television, of course, it's mostly watching old movies, but the fact is that they are translated into a television form of experience by the medium. That is, a movie put on television is not a movie anymore. It is television. And television goes into you. It's like a drug. It's an immediate injection into your system, your nervous system. See, this is why drugs took over medicine. They were just imitating the TV effect. It goes inside you. It's an injection. That is not a figure of speech, McLuhan says. It is literally an injection into your nervous system. And the Krugman experiments reveal this. Krugman was the General Electric scientist who decided to disprove McLuhan in the late 60s, and he ended up proving McLuhan, and he was shocked. And he told McLuhan, I proved that you were right. McLuhan says, well, I don't care. I'm going on to make more discoveries. So he didn't wait around for scientists to validate and make laws what he was saying because he knew that was obsolete, as Ion says. But that's an interesting point. And he had just found out about Krugman that year. It is literally an injection into your nervous system, and the Krugman experiments revealed this. Mrs. Whelan goes, yes, but surely all thought process stopped there. But surely all thought process is stopped there. Whereas the blind man presumably, McLuhan interrupts, thought is again something subject to amazing varieties depending upon cultural setups. So she's just talking about one kind of thought process. The idea that the body itself might be turned into a means of intellectual awareness is now an everyday fact under electric conditions. So the body is a probe. That's Carolee Schneemann, who just died this week, did that in performance art. You know about her, right, Reiner?
Well, she was a longtime friend, yeah.
Yeah, she was a female prober with her body in the 60s. It was so shocking to people. A guy attacked her during a performance, dragged her to the side and tried to strangle her to death. Anyways, the idea that the body itself might be turned into a means of intellectual awareness is now an everyday fact under electric conditions. Now, again, it is very, you know, so Schneemann didn't know it was happening. She didn't have to be so dramatic. It was happening across the culture anyways. but maybe being dramatic pointed it out, so that's tricky. Now again, he says, now again, it's very difficult to evaluate these things, but it's very different from the sort of thinking that went on in the age of concepts. So you can't use concepts to think. I can only suggest that might be one place at which to begin to study it. Study the nature of preconceptual thought. You might go back to the pre-Socratics or pre-literate thinkers to see how they encountered their world. So that's the shaman world. But we are post-literate and more primitive than the pre-Socratics ever dreamed of being. So we're more primitive than the Paleolithic caveman. Mrs. Whelan says, thank you. Mr. McLuhan says, I think we will let it go at that. So then Mr. Berger in French says a bunch of stuff, and I don't know what he's saying. He just says, thanks a lot, everybody. So there you go, Reiner, an awesome fucking bunch of words.
That's a great paper. Wow, holy shit.
Yeah.
That opens up a lot of stuff, man. That's incredible.
Yeah.
You're posting that, right?
I'll probably scan it.
Yeah, well, send me a PDF.
No, I won't do that. I will scan it and post it on the McLuhan blog, and then I'll send the parts, the page shots to you, or you'll look at them.
Yeah, perfect, because I think I'll read that out to my crew.
Yeah, I just want to say, I don't want to say what it is, Reiner, but you know what it is. My acquisition of the last few months, say what it is. It is absolutely fucking amazing. It's really amazing. I'll talk to you about it privately.
Okay. We need to do a phone call anyway, so yeah.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Bob got a new girlfriend.
I got a new girlfriend, Reiner. Bingo. My acquisition is absolutely amazing. But everything is a medium. Everything's an extension of humans, so everything's a girlfriend, Michael.
Yeah.
Or Nick.
It's Michael. Everything has to be a girlfriend when you don't have one, Bob.
What do you mean? I got a girlfriend. Her name's Carolyn. You're my bride.
Yeah. No, I'm just talking in general terms.
Yes, that's right. I'm talking in lieutenant terms. I'm talking in sergeant major general terms.
I'm just going to say, I'm just talking in general terms because generally she's called Bingo.
Right, the mechanical bride. Okay, thanks for participating.
Hey, listen, great night, everybody, and we'll
take
talk
care,
again
Rana.
Soon. You too.
Ciao. Right.
Cheers, Rana.
Where can you get entertainment like awesome music and then awesome intellectual discoveries? Unbelievable. The highest quality education you can get right here.
Well, my parallel traveling dream world tonight will be awesome.
Yes, yes. You'll probably be able to continue monitoring us.
For sure.
Okay, see ya. Okay, so what... Jesus Christ, it's only 8:23. We got another 4 hours to fill. I hope you guys got something. Where's Greg? Shall I phone up Greg?
He was on the chat earlier.
Oh, that means he's listening, so maybe he'll call in. What's he say? Oh, Roxy's on there. Let's see what she's saying. She's got to go to work right now, so what the hell? There's a whole bunch of shit going on. People ignoring what I was doing. So, Guten Tag, Roxy, United Blut Mutation, Bert. What's that mean?
Blood mutations. Blood mutations.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Blut is blood, German.
Then she says, you say Wunderbar, Roxy. Sehr schön, that just means beautiful, right?
Yes, very good.
Roxy, Fun Magazine, fake news, and Trump for president. Michael says, the art viewer is painting the artist. Roxy says, you are the critic. Then she says, there's a conspiracy theory about the death of Paul McCartney. He was eliminated because the Beatles were used to promote the sex, drugs, especially LSD, and rock and roll. If you go to San Francisco, be sure you're wearing flowers in your hair and a Zappa mustache. Yes, rappers, rhapsodians. Maybe she wrote that recently after I said rhapsody. Yeah, she has that. The Rhapsody was the artist that used words as magnets to connect the audience with the higher ideas and the divine. That is why you are the ultimate rhapsode. Well, thank you. Leon says, Roxy Rolla. Then Roxy screams, the light. Then she then says, humans have a strong fixation with the darkness and the light. Then she says, Leon, pay attention. It is Rockzilla the monster. Oh, now she's getting inflated. then she posts something, a link. We'll have to look at that. And Bravo posted. Then she says, acquisition of the Bob United Blood Mutations fan club. Roxy says, phone me. Holy shit. Well, she's got 5 minutes, but let's see if she wants to say something. But she may have left. No, wait a minute. Yeah. I think she told me she leaves at 7:30, which is in 5 minutes. So let's see. Okay, I'll take a break. You guys talk about yourself. Yeah, talk about yourself, and I'll just see if she answers. When did she do that? Well, that's pretty recently, I think. But that's ridiculous.
So, so what did you make of all that article, Bert?
Hey, I wanna get that article, but I tried to Google it, and it's really top secret. You can't get it, but that's a really great article. That's the problem I have with Kuzkin.
Stay half an hour. I'll be late.
What do you say, Roxy? You can talk longer?
Yes, I'll be late. I'm always on time.
Yeah, did you hear that article I read?
Yes, it was really amazing.
Yes, it was really appropriate to all the artist wannabes.
But what was that?
What was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a document that came into my hands that no one's ever seen before.
Ooh.
Yeah.
No
secret.
One. It's top secret, and it's about stuff that I wanted him to talk more about, you know, like, and I finally got it.
Mm. Yeah, it is really good.
Yes, so I'll have to let the dummies know about it, and they'll just get mad at me for not doing it in the right format or something.
I was at the Vatican, and I found this in the secret
library. That's right. I'm just back from the Vatican. The Pope has an incredible McLuhan collection. He has all the good
stuff.
They
were trying to change all history of humankind.
Yeah. Holy shit, the secret McLuhan. That's right. And, you know, he's making, only I know, which I got from the letters, that Rosenberg supported him. People know that. 5 years later, Rosenberg's on a panel outside New York City, and he was there to respond to McLuhan, and he couldn't respond. He said, I don't know what McLuhan's talking about. And then a year later, he's stuck with McLuhan, and McLuhan's making fun of him, telling him he's obsolete. You write art criticisms in silly comic magazines. This is fucking amazing.
Yes, like, now that I am studying again, I'm really shocked, like, one of the professors said, everything in the internet, like 99% is fake, is false. Right? If you do serious research, you have to look into serious sources. Please look into books. Don't research on the internet. Like, I'm like, so much things are posted every day. Who can control how much of this information is fake or not? It's impossible.
Yes.
Like, every day is like, and he looked at me like, shut up. Like.
You actually said that in class.
Yeah, well, that's what I tell you. It's like better not to say anything. Just okay.
But that's the last thing you said, eh? That was your final outrage. You're fucking nuts, sir. You're a German. You're a German Nazi. I mean, he's now the underground. They're telling people to ignore the internet, go back to books and articles.
Wow.
Yes, like it's more... serious and it's better to really check the sources. Like,
yeah, well I got some stuff here for him.
Of course, old school.
I mean, McLuhan's saying the writers don't in the first 100 years had no public. Montaigne, the first famous essay, he says, "I'm sorry, nobody here to receive my work."
Yes, it's true.
So the Android meme is doing that. The Android meme is covering up the fact that its technology is only for itself. It's doing its damnedest to say there are all kinds of publics, all kinds of people to listen. So it's the opposite of the print effect at the beginning of the print age.
And this is the new revolution. Like, you know, there was a lot of violence yesterday in Paris.
Yes.
They even burned out the Fouquet.
I saw that.
You
posted
because,
it.
Because, I mean, people feel totally frustrated because they don't understand why they're being so ignored by the government. Like, they don't care about the people. And it's, of course, it's the end of me.
There are no people there.
People don't care.
Yeah. That's right. They're burning down things, and there's no one there to respond. That's what you're saying, eh? That's interesting.
Yes. Yes, because...
Well, is Macron saying nothing?
He was on holidays.
Oh, he was on holidays. That's right. He had a good alibi. Yeah, I'm on vacation. I deserve vacation like the rest of you people.
Yes, but...
Yeah, somebody's going to figure out something and get real mad.
Yes, and there is another new group. They are all dressed in black, and they say they showed up first in Berlin in the 2000-something.
Yeah.
Like the very radical left groups. They're like a violence tourist. They go to different demonstrations in different places, and they are quite violent. Like very radical.
Like Antifa.
Yeah, like a hooligan, like a football hooligan, but they are supposed to be more into politics and...
Well, are they the black people, the black-clothed people since Seattle 1999 that, you know, disrupt the demonstrations and break store windows? Those black-clothed people? Is that who you're talking about?
I suppose there must be, like, imitating or whatever.
And they are paid for by CIA or some George Soros or somebody to do that. They are paid to do that.
Yes, because I suppose they use them, and then they can say, well, now we can prohibit these demonstrations, and this is getting too much. This is too violent. So then they can start really attacking
arresting
the
us.
Yellow vest movement.
Yeah, they start arresting people. So... That's the problem today. There's too many people to arrest. For all the guys doing it should be arrested. That's what they're always saying. In the
meantime, the Android Meme doesn't care.
Yes, there's nobody there. The Android Meme has arrested everybody, the whole world. And McLuhan used to say that. The whole world became a prison under the global theater of satellites.
But the interesting thing is they are implementing the quantum computers, so... That they say that's why there was this problem with the social media, like for 8 hours. And I don't know how long.
Because of the new computers.
Yeah, that they're like doing the changes, and that's why all the banks are going bankrupt, because it's like the whole system that supports it.
Doesn't work. I am making sure it doesn't work. So it's just like the old AI, artificial intelligence project in the 80s and 90s. That led nowhere. The quantum computer is going to lead to nowhere. Unless ION is behind it. LaRouche used to say, no revolution is going to happen in America unless I'm part of it.
Yes, but the Russians already said they were able to go back in time, like for a second or something like that.
Yeah.
With quantum computers.
Yeah, but they're calling quantum, but they probably aren't what we think is quantum. It's just a term for people. That they recognize.
It's a new Android meme.
Yes, I think we should use the Android meme. The Android meme is making inventions for itself. See, that's the lie. They say, oh, yeah, we're making great progress with the quantum computer. Pretty soon you'll have one. And we think he's talking to us. No, he's not. And the people, Zuckerberg and them, they think they're being talked to, so they used it and it broke their Facebook. Wasn't for them. Well, that shut down the conversation.
So we have to listen to Frank Zappa. Yeah. There is no other solution.
Yeah, there's no solution. Everybody listen to Frank. You know, Rabelais.
The United Blood Mutations and listen to Zappa.
Yes, and now, you know, Rabelais in 1500s or so, whenever he wrote, said that. He demanded everybody to put down their hoe. You know, they were all farmers, hoeing the ground. Everybody put down their hoe and their plow and read my books. He demanded that.
Well, he was actually a very good friend of Nostradamus. You know, they went together to medical school. And they were also a very good close friends of the sister of Frank I, Rabelais and Nostradamus.
Yeah, Henrietta, right? Is that her name, Henrietta?
No.
Henrietta was the
Marguerite.
One.
Marguerite. Marguerite
de Navarre. Oh, yeah. So Henrietta is the one who...
The Belgian.
Yeah,
the wife
Belgium,
of Leopold.
That's right. But I think, so this Michael Zarian, he's got a new record tape out, the Female Illuminati, and he names Henrietta, and I thought it was the one that's the sister of Frank Francis I, and he describes her as, you know, in touch with everybody, the Protestant reformers, and exactly the way Francis I's sister was. So maybe I'm remembering the wrong name, but he seemed to call her a member of the feminist, or not feminist, female Illuminati. It's interesting how he touches a bit on some of the Ion people. But he has a pretty paranoid view of what's going on.
Yes.
But yes, she was really influential. Francis' first sister.
Yes, and it's really interesting how they are all connected. Like,
yeah.
Like really, really, really close friends, and they knew about the work. And she was financing even the
everything.
Works of some Protestant. And Rabelais and Nostradamus. And,
right. Well, that's then.
That, like, this is the type of thing LaRouche got into. Like, nobody tells you, but all these things are going on.
And what did LaRouche do?
Like, he will find out these weird connections.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see if anybody's being... cut off. No, everybody's here. Do you guys have nothing to say?
No, I got to come in because that thing you were reading was so good.
Yes, you had to get your voice in here.
Yes,
that'd be part of history.
That was a great rhapsody.
A great rhapsody, that's right. But hey, come on, Michael, Nick, say something.
They all fainted, you know. They
yes.
Were like, that was too much.
I think I'll have to release
next
that one.
To their eyes are
Bob?
White.
Yeah, spittle's coming out of their lips. They're drooling. Yeah, Michael,
Bob,
or Nick.
I have a few patents. This is Michael.
Yeah.
I have a few patterns that came up from the secret document. Of thinking of going back to when visual space was first being charted and how that was done by making rules. And then the very first thing Ion says is no rules.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So... it seems that to enter a new environment requires uprooting rules. And it's interesting to see that in the chip body at the moment, we have this big debate going on in relation to what are the rules of the chip body, which is the whole Alex Jones scenario.
You mean about policing the internet?
What are the rules in this? What are the rules in this environment? People are actually still trying to figure out what are the rules.
I was very impressed that like there is this guy talking about the economy every month, called Pierre Jovanovich. He's a very good journalist. He started writing about computers, and then he got into the Wall Street thing, and then he saw many weird connections with the Bible when, in 2008 when the Wall Street fell.
Connection with what? Did you say the Bible?
Yeah. Because when the Wall Street fell down, it stopped at 777, and he saw it like a sign of things that are in the Bible.
Yeah.
And he wrote two books, one is 666 and the other 777, and he talks about all these things. But in deep, like, he's somebody who really, he publishes books, and he reads a lot, and he's, like, very well informed in many fields. And he was saying this month that the main printing press in France that made all the official documents went bankrupt and was dissolved very fast.
Mm.
Like, they cannot do now their own passports and all the official papers. And they say, he says maybe because if people want to go out of the European Union, like a Frexit is being called, France will not be able to print their own money. But I think with this, all these changes that are occurring now, it's like the Gutenberg Galax is actually finally dying somehow. Like
the Gutenberg Galaxy, did you say?
Yes, like
yeah.
they are trying to disappear the fiat money and coins.
Yeah, visual space.
In some countries in Europe, like Holland, the Netherlands, they don't use the small coins anymore.
Yeah.
Like the cents.
Yeah.
And they can pay with credit card very small amounts, like 1 euro or whatever amount they can pay it with the credit card. And
right.
When sometimes they I hear when they get some money back or they want to pay a small amount here, there is always a minimum, I think it's 5 euros, and you have these little coins and they're always make fun like these things are obsolete.
Right.
But
now, the kids
can't get passports.
The new people cannot get passports, Bert.
Wow.
Well, I suppose they're going to be made by the European Union, but not in France.
Oh, yeah.
The mafia.
But it's weird. Like in Italy, they're really into working with the Chinese because there is no other way out. And now they say France is in a worse situation than Greece. And,
And they're reaching out to China.
Yes, but this disappearance of the fiat money and this printing press in France, I see it as the end of the Gutenberg galaxy is finally dying.
Right.
Like, there is something else coming, like really a big change in the economy and in everything.
Well, the electric environment used, you know, Gutenberg Galaxy as its content. So that was the wealth of the last 100 years. People selling more books, movies, and all these Gutenberg artifacts. So the electricity supported that. Now the electricity is becoming obsolete. It's on the ground of the Marconi Galaxy is being threatened. And everybody's forgotten about visual space, and they don't even care about it. Yeah, you want passwords? Sorry, we forgot to make any this year. So it's visual space has been gone for a while. What we're seeing is the end of the electric space, and the totalitarians are going to try to make the electric space surveillance big brother. But that can't happen in the new ground, which is ionic.
Right, because according to this theory of the fruits of human labor, as we progress, we have to produce more and more and more energy because the exchanges are more complex and they're an increase in all the exchanges. And
Yeah.
And we need more energy to produce and to sustain the society and the increase of the population. So, yes, we have to go into the cold fusion.
Yeah, the electric technologies are too old.
And that's why the system is falling apart. We need this new implementation of the technology.
I think you have it. Now, let's see what Michael was going to say. He was saying, were you talking about 2,000 years ago, Michael?
No, I'm talking about this article that you were reading.
Yeah.
And just talking about, in that article, you were speaking of, or someone was talking about charting visual space and how it was charted by making rules in it. And it was interesting to me that this breakdown of rules is happening on many levels. One of them is that Ion gave us the key to getting out of rules, and that was the 6 degrees of separation, not asking a question with what, when, how, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that way we can get around our rules. But it's interesting that that process of what, when, how, everything is now completely not acknowledged as valid anymore because it's all fake news. Journalism is based on answering the questions what, when, where, how, etc. But no one believes them anymore. So the,
right.
So all of that is collapsing. So I thought that was an interesting pattern. And then another
pattern.
Okay,
what is the interesting pattern? What did McLuhan say that relates to fake news?
Yeah, for me, it was the dependence on rules, or how rules. For me, what triggered it was just trying to imagine what it was like when visual space was first being charted, when it was first arriving, and now we're in the same process with Ion. We're charting a territory. The internet is trying to chart its own. The Android meme is trying to chart its own territory with rules. Ion is, as very first thing says to us, is no rules. So I was just seeing that pattern all the way, and that
Hey, Michael, let me just say this is why we go backwards in the Bible. You know, the Bible comes out of the visual space when they were developing rules, but the content of the Bible includes the pre-rule phase, and we're going backwards into the Old Testament to the world of no rules in the Garden of Eden. So when Roxy says that the Goomer galaxy is gone, the materials for making the rules aren't even noticed or remembered.
Right. And it's a very freaky place to be in if a person is living still by rules, and it must be very create a lot of paranoia, et cetera, et cetera. Especially religious rules, all those kind of rules must be creating such a dissonance with the isness of everything at the moment.
And the socialness of rules, society's manners.
Yeah. And one can see that breakdown too when cell phones came in, the etiquette of collective gathering of people completely broke down as to what was acceptable and what is now acceptable. Even in that realm of behavior, rules were just crumpling. So in my mother's generation, you wouldn't be able to just in mid-conversation start talking to somebody else. But today, in mid-conversation, you can just start talking to someone else in a different country, and that's acceptable without having to even apologize anymore. You just go, hold on, I've got to take this.
Or completely ignore the person in front of you.
Yes,
they disappear. They disappear as we move. In that context, we are actually moving into a different environment while we're still there in this middle of this conversation. We disappear. And so those rules are going as to what is regarded as social etiquette and all of that. It's very interesting to see it all just disappearing, as Rocky said.
Okay, this is Michael. So McLuhan said that print stood on the sidelines while all the electric media had civil war in the 20th century. So the print media were the bankers and the fascists, the totalitarians, who tried to keep visual space going in the 20th century. Now we're witnessing the fascists trying to keep old electronic communication forms going in the post-electronic time we're in. And that's why the metaphor for quantum. They're saying we're developing new post-electric technologies called quantum computers.
Well, that's
the like in the quantum,
yeah,
they have say yes, no, maybe, and yes and no, or, you know, like more possibilities than just one and zero.
In the quantum.
And, yes, and now there's a lot of young people that doesn't identify like with one gender, they're
right.
Gender fluid. And besides all the hormone disruptors that are creating this havoc,
yeah,
there is also like a lot of identity confusion in young people. Like they want to change their sex, or they don't want to have any sex. And like I was reading an article in Hong Kong, I just posted it on your Facebook. In some Asian countries, some young people just stop. They don't engage. They are completely apathetic about everything. They don't care about anything. They don't want to engage. They don't want to work. They don't want to do anything.
They're sort of autistic, consciously autistic.
They just shut up. They're normal.
They're not autistic. They're consciously autistic. But you're saying they will not do anything.
Yeah.
That's why Carolyn says they want socialism, just everybody go on welfare, because they've been sharing information and their minds with each other for 20, 25 years. They don't know anything else but sharing. So why not put Bernie Sanders in and share the hardware wealth?
Yes, and I find it like really hard. For example, now I have to do homework and study and do this and that. I have to turn on my tablet and my cell phone and put it in another room and close the door. I go to another room and try to concentrate.
On visual space. You're trying to do visual space.
There's so many things, like videos and things, and, you know, like somebody may send you something and then just start linking and surfing again.
Yeah.
And it's, like, really distracting. There's so much out there that... education has to change and do things differently because...
You put yourself back in the Gutenberg technology because you're trying to get something solid. And we don't know how long the Gutenberg means of support works. Like, they might declare next year, forget it, we're all going on welfare. Roxy, you don't have to go to school.
No, but you still have to do something. And I say, well, if I have to do something, I would like to teach little young children music.
Yeah.
Like,
but like.
So that's why I'm studying pedagogic. But
Pierre Jonovic.
Yeah.
Okay, but wait. So do you get this? The identity people are the fascists because they never got to do that in the 20th century. So they're the content from the electric age, which had no chemical body identity, but those idiots want to have identity. Or even make it an issue and say, I don't have an identity, they're rearview mirror. They're part of the electric analog world.
Yes, and I found some YouTubers that are really interesting. One is called ContraPoints. It's a transsexual young man.
Yeah.
And he's very funny. He's doing things, for example, why he stepped out of academy and what he thinks about alt-right. And he has, like, different characters that he does himself, and sometimes they come back.
Is that the video you sent me that's helping kids get out of the alt-right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that yet.
But he has many different topics, and he does all these different characters.
Yeah.
And
so he's doing Quadrophenia.
Yeah, so he's, like, also talking about these things like, well, it's weird to be a transgender woman in this planet and this and that.
Is he pro-transgender?
He's a transgender.
Oh, okay.
So he's
declared war and has developed new rhetorical techniques to get people out of...
Well, he says he's a comedian.
Yeah.
And he's quite funny, I think. And then there is another trans woman, and she looks like a very beautiful blonde girl. But she then talks about how she wanted to have a child, so she went to a sperm bank place, and but she looks like a woman, but she's actually a man, and she wanted her sperm to be frozen, but when you take hormones, you become, you're not fertile, and so she didn't know that, and whatever.
Right.
But she's talking about all these problems of these people that are, like, between the two sexes.
Right. So the chemical body is blurred, and you got these fascists who still want to make an issue out of the chemical body. And the discarnate body is what we've been, and nobody knows how to talk about that unless they're living it, and they just don't want to hear it being described. Like some people who are mad at the people, the transgendered, instinctively know that we don't have a body. See, that's what the alt-right is. And they think it's silly to make issues out of that. But they're not aware of the disservices of their chip bodies. They embrace the chip body.
Also, these things with the alt-right and the refugees is also part of this confusion of identities.
Like, yeah.
Some people say they're actually patriots, or that they want to save Western civilization, or that also the white race is being eliminated.
Yeah.
They also feel now like a minority.
Yeah.
And so it's also, it's not about gender, but it's about the idea of race and national identity.
The chemical body.
There are no more states or countries. And this phase of mutation and disappearance of all these things, so all these systems, all these ideologies and laws. And
okay, so what was Michael going to say? Let's see if it relates to what you're saying. You started to say something 5 minutes ago, Michael.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. You can say your bit.
No, it's okay. Let's see Michael. Good. No, that's good. I heard Ian say recently on a on Iron Free Radio, Bob, it's not between Hillary and Trump. It's between Trump and the oligarch. And, yeah, so, and that was quite a while. It wasn't a while back. That was just before Trump, just before Iron left and Trump was already in the running and all of that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, also from that, what you were reading, it was talking about controlling, you know, what's being controlled. And so the pattern I saw there was, there's a control which is fighting over territories and minerals. And at that, and then there's a control, it moved to fighting over wiring, which was really interesting. And now it's moved to fighting over who controls data.
Yeah.
So during these periods, too, it's interesting, is during the fight over territories and minerals, it's really about a fight over who has the best access to royalty or the priesthood or to the prophets. When it's protecting wiring, it's really about who has access to the best medium. This is like an invisible ground behind what's going on. And all, because that's what the oligarchy are about. They're really about trying to have some control over the non-physical in their world. They know that that's what they're doing. Maybe. And then when it comes to controlling data, now in this area when we actually have a data, which is ion. So it moves from being a medium, controlling mediums to this large or ion, you know, to being the non-physical being here.
Yeah.
And in between this, from wiring, protecting wiring, to protecting data, that's when you obsolete the oligarch by,
right.
You know, they are now obsolete, actually, because once iron, and also once iron absolutely comes in the picture, that whole trying to control that invisible ground is now out of anybody else's hands. So I found that interesting. Okay, because
Michael,
all,
let me.
I would like to say something.
I'm done anyway.